While this is loading, I can offer a couple of statements. I am from Florida. The question about engagement of the tribal nations is not unique to California. We've heard that. Issues of sovereignty, and the other question about relationship with the military. There's a couple of things going on nationally. They've done some series of training courses where they've engaged the military personnel to come in and learn about the citizen side of response, and they're also conducting a series of training sessions going to all the major bases that are going around now and looking at various types of response activity and how to get the military interaction. My name is Thomas Belcour, and other than being paid by the taxpayers of the state of Florida for 35 years, I have nothing else to disclose. And I thank them. The use of the incident command system in a vaccine for preventable disease. We've heard a great deal of discussion about a lot of money that's gone into preparedness, and certainly we have put significant efforts into getting public health workforce trained in the incident command system. A lot of discussion about that is that whether or not it has applicability across other actions and other activities within public health, and I'd like to present a case for that. No relationships. Okay. Why use the incident command system? Those of us have been trained and actually involved in utilizing it in a number of things. Of course, it focuses the assigned party to objectives. Objective-based management in the middle of any situation of activity is a key to proper success. I think one of the other key things is that within the command system, within the planning cell, it sets up standardized reporting times. All too often, when you're involved in an event of any size or shape, you tend to start letting those timelines slip. Everything being related, as you well know, in outbreak management, that a certain key piece of information that you were depending upon may show up at a time frame when everybody else has already engaged in the process. And you have multiple issues in any particular event, particularly in an outbreak, a focal epidemic situation like that, management of all of those capabilities. We're certainly no strangers to ICS and large events. In terms of sticking out in the middle of the Atlantic and across to the Gulf, we are visited routinely by hurricanes. I've been assigned as the health and medical branch chief for the health for those operations for Hurricanes Charley, and then in southern Mississippi for Hurricane Katrina in 2005, and then utilized it just for those that we really don't specialize in hurricanes. We can use fire as well, and the evacuation of the county, an entire county's healthcare system, in short order in 1998. So we do, in fact, utilize the event. Here's a ICS from a public health response in Hurricane Charley. This is a multi-county response at the point of impact where Charley came into Port Charlotte Harbor and hit Charlotte County direct on, a very small intensified event, but a huge population, a vulnerable population, particularly in aged elderly, and moved across the state. Little bigger response model in Hurricane Katrina in southern Mississippi, and having to break that out. That is one of the more, in terms of hurricanes, Hurricane Katrina was a mass casualty event, which certainly presents its own set of challenges, which is much different than what you see in various events that we have going on. But we know that incident command works for large events. We've seen it work in fires and multi-state events out here in the West, and we've seen the utilization. But what I want to do is I want to take it to a smaller event and see how this can help your local health department, particularly if you're resource challenged. And, of course, none of you are as public health professionals. And my home county, which is Alachua County, is the home of the University of Florida. And the event starts on 29 April 2007, where a University of Florida Student Health Center reports rash presentation consistent with rubeola. What a great save. This is an ARNP that had worked in the public health system or in the student health system for a number of years and is one of the few remaining people on Earth that has seen live rubeola. And reports it on Sunday afternoon to me. We had not had a case of rubeola in 22 years. So at that point, you know you're dealing with one of the most infectious substances, viruses known, with a reproductive value of 12, contrasted to 2 for flu. And we start a backtrace investigation, and we realize that there were two previous generations. So we're now in third generation propagated source outbreak. As stated, when you look at the practice of healthcare today, if you go back to your communities and look at your pediatric or your general practitioners and ask them if they have seen a case, an actual live case of rubeola, you'll find that the vast majority have not, or have not seen one in a number of years. So you have that sort of aha moment that you're now dealing with this particular problem. And here's what we started to work with. The first case, actually in April 1, index case was in India during the month of April. A lot of festivals, a lot of travel there, university travel, not just from the University of Florida, but many of the colleges and many of the areas around the United States, so there was movement back and forth. We knew there was documented cases of rubeola in India at the time and in those particular festivals. All the cases that we did find, the three individual cases, were documented, IgM confirmed by our state lab. All were members of an Eastern religious sect that's very large in its scope of travels, does not prohibit vaccination, but routinely refuses it. So the vaccination rates were at best estimated at somewhere between 30 and 40%. Of this particular sect, we have one of the largest temples, considerable state and national visitation moving across international lines. Further, one of the household cases was in our community college. So now we had inside the University of Florida cases, inside the community college, and then the sect itself as a very active family-oriented operation and a large grade school population, and they used local schools for their educational capabilities as well as a church school. Multiple contacts. How many in here have worked a rash illness vaccine preventable disease? We got one, we got two. Okay. Lots of different things happen when you're dealing with a vaccine preventable disease, and certainly some significant challenges occur when you're dealing with rash illness. So you start out with making it known to the medical community that we are dealing with rubeola, lab-confirmed rubeola. We need to get out there. We need vaccination teams. We're going to have to blitz the community. It's going to happen on three levels. Level number one is inside the actual temple itself to work within that community. But also at that point, a lot of folks that have self-deferred about MMR vaccination will be then coming in and wanting to be vaccinated. Rash illness consultations. Because rubeola is so infectious, one of the recommendations is that if a case of measles is in an exam room or in a waiting room, that the recommendation is that you clear it out, and it's 4 hours before you allow people back in. So you've got that sort of level of infectiousness. It also, based upon timing and whenever this occurs, you may have a number of different rash illnesses floating around the community, fifth disease, heat rashes, anything of that nature. So as a result, you now have to set up a rash illness consultation. You certainly aren't going to bring them through the front in the waiting room of your health department. So you said we have a rash room or a contagion room. We set that up. And then you have to have those individuals that exist in your community or in your health department that have actually seen live measles. We're very fortunate in that regard because of the core group of this health department had been together for many, many years, and we had worked, a large one in 1985. The intensive epidemiological investigation, any case being run out, particularly in the issues of the university and involvement. University does have a second MMR requirement and capability, and they were very, very cooperative and supportive in making sure that all these individuals met that. We had that same issue with the community college, but they're not as enforcement level at the enforcement level that the university is. Of course, public information, we all know that management of a vaccine-preventable disease or any other disease is highly important. But I will also say to you that one of the issues is rumor control, and that is certainly different than risk communication. The rumor control issues that when you're working a disease of this type are going to be extensive. I can give you an example that we had one family that had a rash illness that was not measles, And yet, in the span of 4 days, we had four calls from four different sectors of the community, all describing a case of measles that was being hidden from the health department, and was all the same family. So make sure that your rumor control nodes are in active mode, and we certainly cut off a lot of incredible time waste looking for that. We had a very, very intensive investigative team in the county. The county is being centered at the University of Florida. International travel through agricultural, we see a lot. We're a focal point for health referral, both from a standpoint of animal and humans. So as a result, we've seen a lot of different diseases in that community. But the bottom line, you're shaking off 22 years of rust to do one of these events. And it certainly is one of those things that is going to challenge any particular health department and how to best manage it. This is a classic measles or an ICS structure. It's an ICS 207 for those of you who speak fluent ICS. If you see there, myself, as I was running it as the incident commander. However, we have several individuals within the health department that are trained at the 400 level. Had this gone any further out, where my background investigative skills in epidemiology would use, I would have turned it over to them, and they would have assumed that particular role. Operations, Emily Wilson, the staff epidemiologist, was coordinating that. But under there, looking at the various things that you need, the vaccine branch, we went out, we had vaccine clinics set up at the health department. We also went out to the Temple site on an afternoon when they'd had services, set up a pod out there, conducted vaccinations at their on site. The investigation branch, of course, would be scalable based upon what we had going there. But then the education branch, tying back that each member of the schools had a directed point of contact so that we were able to transmit information or collect information, and most importantly, rumors from those particular sites and disseminate back to an individual point. Our plans chief was not a public health specialist. He is a human resources specialist. He is trained at the ICS command plans chief level. Keep that in mind, that writing good objectives is not necessarily has to be a public health person. It can be a person who writes good objectives. This individual is very good at that. And so he was responsible for those objectives on those morning meetings. And logistics, and of course, making sure from a finance standpoint that if this thing got large, we would be begging the state for money. The structure itself, it provides for that clear framework for operational activities and defines the roles and responsibilities. And I find that to be a most agreeable thing to do, and particularly a lot of times if you're doing it on your own or if you're going to become part of a multifocal outbreak. We heard some discussion here about crossover in, of course, large urbanized systems, bedroom communities, those sorts of things. If you're dealing with crossover, that focal responsibility of who's doing what on which side of an arbitrary line, political line, becomes incredibly important. Defined event reporting, our reporting periods were at 0700 and 1700 each day. Everybody clearly understood that their objectives must be in and how far the completion rate was. We utilized the standard format. We did not change any of the forms. Forms work fine. They'll work very well, the 202s. We're, of course, reporting to the state because they were seeing their first case, their first rubeola focal epidemic in many years. And to the other Temple sites to make sure, because, again, there was a lot of movement in and around this particular area. The results, amazingly enough, is that when we installed this system, when we installed the intensive arrangement that we had no additional cases. We did, in fact, operate a rash diagnosis clinic for two full incubation periods. Going back to your measles epidemiology, that's 20 days. We had 250 new vaccinees, mostly in a very hard-to-vaccinate population. But most importantly, I think we got out of it, we got some new converts to ICS. That people that looked at it and said, oh, it was only for those big events and the things that you go to, they now saw that you have that capability of utilizing this, directing your focus, and how it best blends to make sure that everybody walks out of your first planning meeting with all the information that they need. As you might tell, I am a true believer. I've been using this since 1998. I've seen it work. I believe that public health could utilize it in their health department settings. They could utilize it in event management, in smaller events. Probably would be very helpful to them to start small. It's like anything else. That's why you have a preseason in football. Rather than wait and you say, oh, now we've got this huge event, and oh, by the way, let's grab this thing called ICS and we're going to make it work. Any questions? Yes, sir.
More of a comment. In the ICS, I'm a believer, so I worked at a VPO outbreak in Arizona back in 1987. One of the problems we had to deal with was a very rapid anti-immunization group. And so you also have to deal with the legal component where ICS actually can do that while you're going on with the other part. You can deal with the legal issues if somebody decides to seek an injunction.
Found that. Yes? Mm-hmm. Within the health department, well, we have redundancy. We have trained everybody in our health department has had at least ICS 100 and 700. Supervisors have had 200 and 300, and the command, as I stated, the command team, we had four individuals that have been trained at least to the 400 level, and we're interchangeable parts. The other part about it is that because we tend to go active on hurricanes about every 20 minutes, or at least it seems that way, is that we also see that we have to do that redundancy, so everybody knows that. The other thing about it, you made a good point. You know, you don't necessarily set your operational periods at tight. You have that capability of setting it when it works for you. But that also, but it does transmit to everybody operating in that event that this is when we're going to meet. And if you'll stick to that and you'll hold to those things, you'll find that you get a lot better data flow, better data management. That's really one of the keys for us. Yes.
Vaccinees.
We had no further care, no further generation.
And was
the vaccine basically in the Washington County? Right, in the county area, but some in the sect, and then other individuals coming in wanting their children to be vaccinated.
There's a follow-up then on were there other, when you talked about very fluid population that you were using for travel and movement, were there other outbreaks in other areas of Florida or their travel connections? Right.
Well, we certainly, of course, it went through the state epidemiologist, and then it was put onto EpiX, the CDC website, and sent out. We did not see any additional cases in the state. Again, it was one of those, quite frankly, from my viewpoint and looking back on the history, my history of investigating rubiola, we caught an incredible break. But I think that all things considered, given the scalability, the way we could have handled it, I think we would have been set up in good stead to catch any additional. We certainly had a good information flow. Yes, sir?
Just a brief question. California has one of the most liberal personal exemptions in all of the states. What is going on with California as why were these kids allowed to go to school if you don't have a person?
Because Florida has the second most liberal.
Good answer.
The issue around opt-out, I think you're seeing, this is my own personal soapbox here, but I think you're seeing the effects of that. You now see that in Great Britain, rubiola is endemic. You're seeing outbreaks of rubiola now in the country, and it's literally just a matter of time before we go back to where we were in the 1980s, early 80s, and what have you.
Thank you so much. And I will quickly add, in Chicago we have 1,200 employees for the city, and every employee is slotted into one of the ICS components. and there is everyone is required to take the at a minimum the 100 level ICS training, and periodically everybody is assigned a responsibility, and we go over that monthly, sometimes quarterly, to remind them. And we've actually used ICS in two or three different occasions in a large scale meningococcal outbreak among men who have sex with men, among TB, and I think the third one was a syphilis outbreak. So it is, many local health departments are using ICS, and it's becoming something that you practice on, and it's really, really very efficient and saves you a lot of headache. Let's move on. Our last presentation today, it's going to be Ms. Alison Canton.